Well, you know that it's going to be alright. I think it's gonna be alright. Everything will always be alright when we go shopping. Well, you know.
We are good to go. Grab your wallets and let's rock and roll. Head to the aisles, supermarkets, big box stores, mom and pop outfits, wherever you may be spending your hard-earned cash this morning. Welcome, shoppers, to the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show. My name is Johnny Wright. I am the host for this 60-minute shop fest. Thank you and welcome to it this morning. Good show. I think you're going to find it very interesting. We're going to talk with Kevin Cooney. Nice conversation with him about growing up in a newspaper family, and that's okay if you're a newspaper writer, but Kevin, as many of you may know, is a TV anchor, the number one TV anchor in all of Des Moines, and actually all of the country. Kevin would probably just punch me hard in the face if he were here to hear me say such a thing, but we'll talk more about that. Also, if you're interviewing for a job, and a lot of people are out and about, of course, with the employment situation like it is, the pillars of great customer service, of which there are five, and we won't go into them right now, apply to your job interview process as much as they apply to anything. And I'm going to give you tips. You're going to get Johnny's 10 tips to getting the interview and to getting the job. And I'm also in the middle of doing interviews for a client of mine, so this is particularly interesting to me and hopefully interesting to you and useful coming up. Your weather forecast, Central Iowa today looks like a ton of sun and heat thrown in free of charge with a heat advisory going on. We could see that heat advisory index. And listen, I don't look at those numbers. I just look at Tater, the Wonder Dog. If he's panting, you know what? Actually, that doesn't even work because he'll pant in the middle of winter. So I'm now going to cross it off my list of barometers for harsh weather. All right, heat advisory. I'll go with the National Weather Service. Heat indices up into the triple digits today. Just not a good day if you are the elderly, the infirmed, or just a middle-aged kind of overweight dude like myself. Listen, I'm not going outside either, but it's going to be a scorcher out there. We'll see highs actually around 94 today. And then tonight, showers and thunderstorms. The thunder boomers build up as that heat begins to dissipate and it rushes up and the whole thing. And you get maybe some severe weather, but that says after 1 o'clock this morning, we'll be safely ensconced in our Betty Buys. And then Sunday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high temperature of 87. Rolling into the beginning of the work week, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms on Monday and a high of 85. Right now we're at a sultry 72. The Unsecret Shopper is a blog and a radio show and a furniture polish now in many countries. You can check it out online if you Google search. Well, no, you can just go to it. We actually have a new URL, a new domain, if you will, a new address on the internet, and it is www.theunsecretshopper.com. That takes you to the blog, which is really the website, which is really the place where you can find out all about the Unsecret Shopper and secret shopping. If you have an interest in secret shopping, I'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hire you for the company. We're hiring people every week to secret shop for the Unsecret Shopper. It's also the place where you can find the latest blog post, which is a secret shopper review of Dewey Ford in Ankeny. And I tried to find some background information on Dewey Ford on the internet for this story. And I should have just called Mark Vukovich, who is the second generation owner of Dewey Ford. His father, Dewey, started the dealership over 45 years ago. There's no Wikipedia entry for Dewey Ford. And considering the history and heritage of that dealership, there really should be. And I think the new owners, of which they are new, the Garf Automotive Group, purchased Dewey Ford about 3 years ago, I believe. They're a multi-state mega dealer out of Salt Lake City, Utah. They own, I believe, in excess of 80 dealerships around the country. But I think it would be a really good idea to have a Wikipedia entry for Dewey Ford because the heritage is long and it's most people know of the Dewey Ford name. When you go to Dewey Ford's website, this is also a place where more history, I think, could be used. It says, "Welcome to Dewey Ford, proudly serving our guests in the Des Moines area for over 45 years. Very nice. And then the next sentence, "At Dewey Ford, we want to ensure that you have a luxury experience worthy of the Ford name and in Dewey Ford tradition." Very nice. Paying homage to the tradition of Dewey Ford. Next line, "Whether you are searching for a new or certified pre-owned vehicle." Okay. All right. And there's nothing wrong with that statement, except that the, you need to pay the homage, you need to pay tribute to, I think, in that place, the history. There should be pictures, old pictures of Dewey and Mark when he was a kid running around trying to start cars, and the old man would come out with a stick and shoo him away, you know, and the whole thing, and the black and whites, and because that's a big deal, I think, in the car buying industry. I think maybe as much as any industry, we like dealerships that have been around a while, that have established themselves, or something about that that's just sort of cool and speaks to our own past. And so I just want to make that point sort of off the top here that I think there's room for that as I'm post-secret shopping their website and other things on the web about them. The secret shopper review of Dewey Ford and Ankeny took place on a Tuesday. Is that correct? Yes, I believe it was on a Tuesday. And I went in twice. I go into businesses at random, select them, and then I will secret shop them. And then I will post that review on theunsecretshopper.com. So Dewey Ford was posted on Thursday. I made two trips into the dealership on the same day, one time in wearing a tie and a nice white long sleeve shirt, stood out, you know, quite a bit. And the second time in sort of wearing scruddy summer Jimmy Buffett kind of clothes. And first time in, I decided I was going to drive around the dealership multiple times. Now, this is how dealers want us to do our car shopping. They want us to drive around so they can spot us. Because one of the great fears of all car dealers is that they build these really large places where they show their wares, and then we come to look at those wares, and where are we? We get lost between the cracks of the cars. And whether a car dealership has an up system, which is everybody who sells cars at the dealership takes turns. When it's your turn, you take the next person up. You are up, like up to bat. You're in the batter's circle, except you're selling cars, not swinging for home runs. And some car dealers have, well, listen, if you see them, go get them. You know, just first come, first serve, like a smorgasbord. So in either event, it's important for car dealers to be able to see us. And they want to be able to see us, seeing us driving around the lot. Well, I made it easy the first time. I drove around the lot several times. And then I parked my car. And my what I was looking for was I was going to exchange the Prius, trade it in, on something fun. And because it's summer, maybe a convertible. So that was the MO. That was the headline for me, what I went in looking for. And within just a couple minutes of me parking the car, salesperson did come up. I had a little interchange with, I believe it was a mechanic or an employee of Dewey Ford who was out on the lot parking cars or backing them up. And it was a very nice exchange. And then as I stood there, and probably the first thing I should mention is the five pillars of great customer service. What are the expectations going into a car dealer? Should we have the same for them as we would any retail setting? And I think the answer is yes. In other words, using the five pillars of great customer service, which I teach with the Biosphere, B-U-Y-O-S-P-H-E-R-E, which is my training secret shopping company. Those pillars are smile, greet, engage, thank, follow up. Okay? You have to have those five present to have a great customer service experience. So smile. Did the salesperson smile at me? Did they continue to smile throughout our conversation? Greet. What was the greeting? Was it a nice, friendly, hello, how are you? And then followed by an open-ended question. What is an open-ended question? And all of this I'm yakking about is also yakked about in greater detail on the unsecretshopper.com blog. Open-ended question is a question that asks for a more expansive answer. In other words, if I say, how are you today? That's an open-ended question. What can I help you with? That's an open-ended question. Closed-ended questions would be, can I help you? That's a dead end, yes or no response. It ends thought and ends conversation at many dinner tables. You don't want that kind of question. That's the wrong kind of question. You want to go deeper into the person, into the consumer's psyche. What do they want? What are they after? The engagement level, pillar number three. How many questions does the person ask? How engaging are they? Do they try to get to what you want in the car you're buying? Do they ask you about what features do you want? Do they ask you why you're buying that particular car? Do they ask you what will you use it for? Do you have a trade-in? Have you been to the dealership before? Have you ever driven the kind of car that you are looking for? I think that's a nice question, because the next question would be, hey, listen, if you haven't, if you like a Hummer and you haven't driven one, let's go pop in one. See, we can, you know, crush some other cars, drive over top of them, whatever. Sure. So engagement level. And then questions about the person's life. This is a date. Retail is dating. Retail is getting to know the consumer, getting to know them as a person. And then, oh, by the way, you're looking for something to buy. Maybe we've got what you want. But it's knocking down those four walls at the beginning and getting close to the person. And that's engagement. That's great engagement. That's friendship building and relationship and trust building. Fourth pillar, great customer service. Does the person thank you at the end of the transaction or of the conversation? And the last one, follow-up. Did the employee, did the car salesperson get contact information so that they can follow up with you? And I can tell you, talking to car dealers whose names and car dealership owners and managers whose names you would easily recognize and identify, that is the one that means more to them than anything else. Why? Because if you ain't got my telephone number, you can't give me a call. If you ain't got my email address, you can't drop me an email. And that whole transaction from the car dealer's standpoint is kind of, it doesn't really mean a lot. It's kind of toasted there. Buying a car, third largest purchase we make in our lives. What's number one? Buying a house. What's number two? Buying me a birthday present. So it's third. So it's a big deal. And we tend to go in with a lot of anxiety when we're purchasing a car. And yet we're going with a lot of joy. There's a duality, a double-edged sword sensibility about car buying, I think. And so at 11:42, I pull into Dewey Country, go into the lot, make the passes around, get engaged by Ron, an employee, very nicely. And then as we're kind of chilling out and talking, Stephanie Albert comes up and says, looking for anything in particular? That's a closed-ended question. That's not optimum. It's not horrible. It's not like she said, hey, stinky pants, what are you doing on our lot? But she kind of did. Because sure, am I looking for anything in particular? Well, yeah, I'm standing here looking for something in particular. That's why I'd be standing here looking for something in particular. So there's a better way to start a conversation. Maybe you say, hi, welcome to Dewey Ford. How are you? So glad you've come to visit us today. Are you here over your lunch break, or do we just get to play for a while? Yeah, that's friendlier. That's fun, you know? That's probably a skosh better than looking for anything in particular. Stephanie made a nice recovery, as she said. When I mentioned I was looking at convertibles, she said, hey, great car for this time of the year. Very nice. She shook my hand, took my name at that point, gave me hers, and off we went. We went to the convertible, we got in. She was very nice at describing the features. She asked me if I wanted to take a test drive. Yeah, that's good stuff, as you should. And at that time, I said, no, you know, I didn't have enough time. But it was a beautiful Mustang convertible, very nice. I believe it was white, nice interior. She mentioned Mustangs don't have rebates as many of the other cars do. And I thought that was pretty cool, because it makes the Mustang stand out as an exceptional vehicle. It's an American classic. And dudes really dig them, and dudettes too. But I really liked the fact, actually, that it didn't have rebates. I thought that was pretty cool, actually. My wallet may not think that. And so we sat and we chatted and this and that. And the conversation was okay, but the one thing sort of missing from it was that spark, that fire. And it's something I talk about when people are applying for positions and they're in interviews. You got to seem excited about yourself or what you're selling or what you're involved in. Energy, excitement, joy, happiness. I want to buy from people who are happy to sell to me. I want to hire people who are happy to work for me. Happiness is key. Everything else falls to the wayside. If the person's not happy, listen, if I tell you someone's going to work for you who has great skill set, type 80 words a minute, very organized, very analytical, I can keep the office going or whatever, and yet they are inherently miserable, are you going to hire that person? Yeah, you might, because I've probably seen them in your office. But I mean, generally, if I just, you know, pose that to you, you might say, you know, yeah, I might have to think about that. Sure. Okay. Stephanie was fine. She wasn't miserable, but she wasn't as happy as she should have been and could have been on a very sunny day with the top down in this beautiful Ford Mustang. And so that was something that I think Stephanie can work on. And I know Stephanie has been shown this review without knowing it. I know Stephanie has, as has Alan, who was the second person who waited on me. And just to close out the situation with Stephanie, one of the things that Stephanie did that also is sort of a no-no is she said something. We were talking about my Prius, and I wasn't sure whether I was going to trade it in. And she said, you'd be better off selling it privately. Dealerships eat up your profit. And, you know, that may be true. That probably is true. I think most of us suspect that that is the truth. But when she's working for the man every night and day, and she's working at the dealership, and now she's telling me something that is sort of anti-dealership, that tends to, in my mind, emotionally coat everything she's telling me with sort of that anti-paint. And she's probably just lowered the likelihood of me purchasing a car from her by, I would say, 15% with that statement. You never, ever take a position or a side that is counter to the company in which you represent. You don't go there as an employee when you're dealing with retail people. As much as you want to be on their side, quote unquote, it's a bad way to go. It's a bad road to go down. So otherwise, Stephanie did some very nice things, gave me her card, shook my hand, got my name, and used it throughout the conversation. It was only 23 minutes we were together. The one thing she didn't do, and I'm sure she'll be told about this, is did not get my contact information. Again, that's follow-up. That's pillar number 5 of all the great pillars of great customer service. Moving on to the second engagement moment that I had was with Alan. This took a little while longer. This one took 26 minutes from the time I got on the car lot. And instead of driving through the lot, waving my hands and honking my horn the second time in, I parked up by another convertible that was on the Chrysler end of the Dewey Ford, Jeep, Chrysler, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. And it took him a while to find me, even though I was in pretty visible. And you can see the pictures of my view from the car I was looking at all the way. I walked all the way up to the front of the dealership, probably no more than 50 yards away. You can see those pictures on the Dewey Ford review at theunsecretshopper.com. You can see I took pictures of those views. You can see how they could have seen me and how I saw them. Alan took a while to get there. When he got there, he was fairly engaging. His first words out of his mouth were, "Hi, anything I can help you find tonight?" That would be considered a closed-ended question, not optimum for reasons we've already went into a great deal. I told Alan I was digging the 300. I was at a Chrysler 300. In fact, I'd had my head in it when he came up. And Alan, after that point, never said anything about the 300 again, and started talking instead about the dealership and how they own 80 of them and how they're one of the largest in the country, and how the company that owns Dewey Ford is going to build a foreign dealership right next to it, and how they are buying Bob Brown, and how they tried to buy Carl Chevrolet, but Carl wouldn't sell. And so, yeah, size, you know, can matter. Just not in that instance. As a car buyer, do you really give a hoot and six-tenths if your car dealership owns 4 cars or 400 car lots? It may mean a little something to you, but at the end it's about, are they nice to you? Do they treat you right? Are they fair? And do they have the right car that you want? So all that size stuff, doesn't matter. Did a nice job about talking about their guarantee certified pre-owns, talking about the maintenance and stuff and everything. But again, didn't really engage me about the car I was looking for. And I've heard from some people who know Alan who kind of said, yeah, that's kind of Alan, you know, that's kind of how we figured he'd be. And friendly guy, tons of energy, good guy, but has some things to work on. And anyway, I talk about that in the review, and you can read more of it if you go to theunsecretshopper.com. You can read my review of Dewey Ford and see how it stacks up to your particular visits to Dewey Ford or any other car dealer. Appreciate you tuning in to the Unsecret Shopper radio show this fine morning. It is 8:19. Coming up, we'll switch gears. Talk with a guy who's probably bought a car or two in his life and heard a car ad or two in his life. The one, the only, Kevin Cooney. anchor for TV8 News for many years. He'll join us next. You're listening to the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show on 1350 KRNT. Business owners letting their hair down this Saturday morning on the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show, 1350 KRNT. Hope you can let your hair down today if you have some to let down. I tell you what, a guy who has maybe the best hair in the television news anchor business is with us this morning. He is a longtime veteran of the local TV news wars. His name is Kevin Cooney, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Good morning, John. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. Kevin, I was doing background stuff, and I was online, and that's the beauty of having the internet. I don't really have to do – there's not a lot of effort that goes into it. I can just Google search your name and figure out where you know what you've done before KCCI. And I got things like Kevin Cooney, longtime Tokyo resident. I got Kevin Cooney, sports writer for the Bucks County Courier-Times. I got – Kevin Cooney, associate professor of political science. I've got Kevin Blue Wave Cooney as the ex-FAU baseball coach. And yep. Have you ever Googled your name? I mean, I'm sure you have. And tell me what do you find?
Actually, you know what I did one time just for the heck of it? I got on Facebook. I'm no longer on Facebook, but I decided to just kind of search Kevin Cooney. And then I sent friend requests to every Kevin Cooney that there was on Facebook, and there were hundreds of them. And there were Ireland, the guy in Tokyo, who's like a comedian, a stand-up comedian, I think, or something. There's an actor in Hollywood who actually, if you go to one of those movie databases, IMDb or something like that, and you Google and you search Kevin Cooney, he's actually played a lot of really neat roles in some really neat movies, you know. But anyway, so yeah, there's a lot of Kevin Cooneys out there, and just stay away from all of them.
That's it. And there's just one little old Kevin Cooney that belongs here in Central Iowa with us. That's the one that matters. Kevin, did you ever want to be, when you were a kid, I mean, did you want to be a news anchor? Did you want to be a Hollywood star? What were your dreams as a young man?
Well, I grew up in a family of journalists. You're a longtime Des Moines resident, so you remember the Des Moines Tribune.
Sure.
And the afternoon newspaper. And my father was city editor of the Des Moines Tribune. My mother was a feature writer for the Des Moines Register. And so we just kind of grew up in this journalistic household where those two topics that you never discuss at the dinner table, religion and politics, were about the only thing that we did discuss at the dinner table. And we'd have great debates and whatnot. But I came from a family of journalists, so I've always said that I just kind of come through osmosis.
Sure. Were you the first TV journalist?
In the family?
Yes.
Forever. I'm not that old.
Sure, exactly.
Yes, yeah, I always kid that I was the family outcast because I went with the electronic media and helped destroy my father's job by knocking out afternoon newspapers all across the world. But
right. Well, that's how how normally the print guys look, right, at the electronic the electric journalists, yeah.
Yeah, but I to be honest with you, I did start my journalistic career started as a copy boy at the Des Moines Register. So I do have a little printer's ink in my veins, but not very much.
Was there ever a time when when you grew up around that much ink and you grow up with that sort of conversation and that level of engagement and interest, I'm sure must have been fascinating growing up. Was there a time when you said, you know, I just want to go be a horse jockey, you know, maybe I want to go just be a bum live under a bridge for a year? Did you sort of feel like you had that option, or was it, nope, you're going into journalism?
Oh, no, not at all. My parents were wonderful. I could do whatever I wanted to. I mean, it was totally up to all of us kids, and there was a whole bunch of us to get into whatever we wanted to. There was never any pressure. I just, I think like a lot of journalists, always liked being where things were going on, liked to be kind of in the know, liked to ask questions and find out more than just what people said. And there's just kind of a natural curiosity, I guess, that comes with this job. And I was lucky enough to have parents that encouraged us to do whatever we wanted to. I think I don't know whether they were flattered or disappointed that I got into the same field that they did, but it paid off in the long run for me anyway.
Well, was there someone that you, as a young person, that you wanted to interview that you actually got to interview when you actually got into the industry?
Yeah, besides yourself?
Yes, of course. Yes, it's a great moment for you, I'm sure. Yes.
Really. I think, you know, the ultimate interviews are always the ones that are impossible, you know, and but I have had the opportunity to talk to a couple of presidents and you know, go places. I don't think I really set myself a goal of talking to one person in particular. It was just like the situation or the news of the time or something like that kind of dictates who you want to talk to, whether it's just that day or that month or whatever.
Kevin Cooney is my guest this morning on the Unsecret Shopper radio show on 1350 KRNT. Kevin, I remember asking you this question when you were interviewing me on the set at KCCI. Who's the worst interview you've ever had? And worst, you can define it any way you want to.
I really, you know, that's a tough question, and I thought about it afterwards. I'm going, maybe I just have a bad memory. I don't know. I can't remember anyone who did. I can remember some bad interviews that I did that were my fault, or I just, you know, didn't.
Well, throw out one. Give us one.
Well, no, I mean, I remember instances where, oh, I should have asked this question or I should have asked that question, you know, that kind of buyer's remorse sort of thing where you afterwards your hindsight is 20/20. I can't remember specifically who it was. I just remember having that feeling a number of times where you're just kind of, I'm a perfectionist and I just kind of wish I would have, followed up somewhere or done something like that. But
are you of, do you have it all dictated out exactly what you want to ask, or do you have a Larry King part of you that likes to sort of wing it and play off the response, or how do you do it?
I think one of the toughest things to do in an interview is to have a list of questions. And, you know, when I interviewed you last week, that's exactly what I had. I mean, I have a list of questions, a list of topics that we want to talk about, and I think maybe we got to half of them.
Sure.
A lot of times, the easiest thing to do during an interview is to listen, but it's amazing how many people don't do that and don't follow up and carry an interview. I hate that term, but I do like to have conversations with people. Mm-hmm. And I think you can have a civil conversation on a controversial matter, and you can call it an interview or an interrogation or whatever you want to, but really when it comes down to it, is I think the best interviews are those that are engaging, that are those that are really conversations where two people exchange ideas or engage in some intelligent questioning and really look for good answers.
When you talk about your journey, you started outside of Iowa and then came here and got to KCCI and sort of never left. Those of you, and for those that are listening, and that would include me, sort of talk about that journey. How did that happen?
Well, I grew up here in Des Moines and started at Channel 8 KRNT back then. Familiar call letters.
yes.
back when I was in high school. And this was, you know, while I had a job, as I was mentioning earlier, as a copy boy at the register, but I'd always been fascinated by this television thing. And so they had news operations, so I thought eventually, you know, maybe I'd like to do that. So when an opportunity presented itself to work part-time, I did that. And kind of kept my foot in the door all that time through high school and through college. And when I graduated from college, got a full-time job at Channel 8 as a reporter / photographer, but did a little weekend anchoring and stuff. But then Molly and I took off for California. She went first, I followed in the late 70s, early 80s and stuff. But then an opportunity presented itself to come back to Des Moines, and regardless of what Thomas Wolfe says, you can go home again. But you can only do it once.
Yeah, right. If you leave again, you're gone for good. Is that how
really
it works?
Right? If they kick you out twice, you're done. So, right. Two strikes and you're out in that game. But the whole idea was to, I think, just kind of come back and it was the perfect opportunity for us to come back home and work at a place that we really both kind of cut our teeth on, and it's been the right decision. It was really, really tough decision at the time because we were having a great time working with wonderful people out in California. And I suppose you probably always will wonder, you know, well, what if we would have stayed? But, you know, what if we stayed out there? We always would have wondered, well, what if we didn't take up this opportunity to come back home, be with our families, and be at a place we really like.
Talk about the playing field from a local television news standpoint in the early 80s. In this market versus what it is today, was eight dominant at the times at that point? Was it all and five was still owned by the university, right? So that wasn't really a
right.
player.
Yeah, to take folks who remember way back when Molly and I both came back from San Jose, Russ Van Dyke was still anchoring the 10 o'clock news, and that was Walter Cronkite, the man just dominated the news ratings and program that he anchored, and Paul Rhodes was doing the 6 o'clock news. We didn't have a 5 o'clock news. Cable news was in its infancy. I think CNN had just gone on the air in 1980 and stuff. And I remember the whole concept of a 24-hour news channel was almost laughable for those of us who were in the business because we knew how hard it was to fill a half hour every night. And here's national news channel that was going to fill 24 hours. Well, now we know how they do that, and I think that particular dynamic has changed local news as well. We have 2 hours of news in the morning. We never used to have any news in the morning before the morning network shows. When we came back, Captain Kangaroo was still on the air. And there was a morning show, you know, the CBS Morning News was a half hour or an hour that ran at like 7 o'clock, I think, before Captain Kangaroo, and the noon news was a half hour. There was no 5 o'clock show. I mean, just the amount of time has changed that is dedicated to news. And I don't know whether that's a business decision or whether that's a public service decision. I've heard both,
sure.
But that I think has been the biggest dynamic that has changed is just the kind of the 24-hour news cycle, and in that time, more recently. With the internet, the demand to provide people with news and information, there are no deadlines anymore. It's when you get it, and we're seeing that on our website, which is quite popular. But I mean, you know, we're putting stories up on the website long before the 5 o'clock news or the 6 o'clock news or the 10 o'clock news.
Mm-hmm. When and I don't know what exactly the time frame was, Kevin, but say when Dan Rather took over for Cronkite. You took over for Russ. Were those kind of within the same ballpark at all? And were there any comparisons made to that?
I never recall any comparisons being made. The whole glorified position of anchor is something that I've never really agreed with. Whether it was on the network level or the local level, we're just readers and writers and reporters, and we all kind of basically do the same stuff. I really don't recall, Johnny, if there was, I wasn't aware of it, of any comparisons being made, and it was one of those deals where, you know, I think the transition was so smooth. Dave Buzik was the one who actually came in when Russ left. Dave was a health reporter and well-respected journalist here from radio days prior to that, and came in and just kind of slid in, and we anchored the 10, and I continued to anchor with Paul Rhodes on the 6 o'clock for another 10 years after that.
More with my interview with Kevin Cooney coming up, including the question I know you've all been waiting for me to ask. Kevin, when you're anchoring the news, boxers or briefs? And no, thong was not an option. Hello! It's 8:40. We'll be back with more with Kevin Cooney, plus some tips if you're interviewing for a job, why customer service plays such a key role. In that interview, you are listening to the Unsecret Shopper radio show on AM 1350 KRNT.
Hey, hello,
saying howdy-do to business people all across the Great Fruit and Plain, employees, shoppers, all of us are in this together as we shop happy, serve happy at the Unsecret Shopper radio show at 1350. KRNT 838. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Johnny Wright. You can check out so much more if you go to www.theunsecretshopper.com, where blog posts and stuff about KCCI. I actually had a visit there and an interview with Kevin, which is what precipitated the interview that you're listening to this morning. Let's get back to it more with my interview with TV8 news anchor Kevin Cooney. Kevin Cooney is my guest this morning. He is the anchor, called the lead anchor for KCCI News?
No, I don't know.
The anchor? Can there be more than one anchor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stacy and I are co-anchors.
Oh, you're co-anchor. Well, has it ever led
equitable
to some problems when we go to a commercial break? And the other guy's getting a little squabble? Well, I do have to ask that serious question, though. Are there, and you're such a nice guy, who would ever fight with you anyway?
But, no, I didn't.
But have ever been sort of tiffs or things pop up, like during the newscast where you sort of have to cool your jets and everybody has to go out and take a breath of fresh air? Does that ever happen in 30 years?
It really doesn't. I mean, Stacy's a great gal. We have become really good friends over the years, and this is the first year that we haven't gone to the IndyCar race with our respective spouses. I mean, her husband and Molly and I, we'd all, you know, pack up the car and go to the IndyCar races over at Newton every year, and we couldn't do it this year, and it was just fun little, you know, outings that we have. You know, and it can go back as far as Russ and Paul and Jeanette and Dave and Kathy Soltero and Sue Mason and all the, you know, the wonderful anchors that I've had the privilege to work with over the years. We've all been very, very good friends. I think that's kind of a watermark or a hallmark or some sort of mark of what Channel 8 has been over the years. We really are a pretty closely knit group, and I don't know how that happens or why it happens, but it does seem to have maintained itself over the years.
Is it true that the 6 o'clock news has not lost a ratings book since Jack Cafferty was at 13?
I think that is true, yeah.
That's amazing.
And people now going, Jack Cafferty? Ooh. Wait a minute, he's that guy on CNN.
little do people realize that he had about a half a cup of coffee here briefly, yes. Yeah.
But that very well may be the case.
The pressure, the dynamic to be able to maintain that, I would think would be quite great, because the minute that you would lose that, and I realize 13 has crept up a little bit, but you're still dominant. Talk about the pressure of that.
You know, I never really worry too much about the ratings. My philosophy has always been that if you cover the news and you do it better than anybody else, the ratings will come. If you build it, they will come, and that it really is true. I mean, I think that there's only so much that those of us who sit on the set can add to the real meat of what it is that we do. And that is the reporting that goes on, the reporting and the writing and the stories that we dig up, and the work that the photojournalists and the reporters and producers and a lot of people who you see only if you come into the station, like the folks that you met, you know, they're the ones that make us really, really, really look polished and smooth out there. And I think that makes a huge difference to what people see when they watch the program. They may not realize it, but there are a lot of people who work off screen, or even those who work on screen are working, doing stuff that, you know, that doesn't get credited to them or anything like that. And that, I think, is crucial to what I say, you know, is my philosophy, is that if you just do the news and you ask the questions and you do the digging and you do the research and you get there first and you get it right, and that the ratings will indeed come. I've never really felt a ratings pressure. I can honestly say that. We certainly keep track of the ratings as they come in and discuss them and, you know, debate them and what they mean and whether they're right or not or anything like that, both when they're good and when they're bad. Is like sometimes, you know, the ratings come in, it's like, this is too good to be true. Can't be right. It's got to be somewhere in between. And so from that standpoint, I've never really worried too much about the ratings one way or the other, and never really celebrated them too much either.
Well, the viewing audience certainly celebrates you and TV8, and has for many years, and it brings up Since this is a show about customer service, Kevin, here's finally a customer service question.
But
it but it has to do with I've always felt that celebrities, and define that any way you want to, actually have a tougher time at times with customer service getting it than us regular folk. And the reason for that is if you go to a restaurant, Kevin, and you get bad service, if you complain, it's Kevin Cooney complaining. If I complain, it's Joe Blow complaining. So talk about how often does that happen? I mean, you get bad service like the rest of us schleps, Kevin. I'm sure that happens. What do you do when that happens?
I just try and be polite because I have to remember that I don't know whether they recognize me or not. I mean, that's not the important thing. But the important thing is that I just have a face that's in their living room every night. So I'm kind of a product myself. So I've got to make sure that even if maybe there's kind of a negative atmosphere or something has happened to me, that I still have Channel 8 tattooed on my forehead, even if I'm just out, you know, trying to have a nice, quiet night out with my wife or the kids or something like that. So I always try and be calm, and I always try and make sure that someone is aware that there's a problem and that there's always, you know, a nice way to solve it, you know, and without being violent or vocal or anything like that. And usually 9 times out of 10, Johnny, I'd say that, you know, it's not anything that's really intentional. It's just kind of negligent or just, gee, I didn't realize that that was a problem. And
if you
talk to people, you find out. The other thing is, when they recognize you, you got to tip more.
Sure.
Oh, that Cooney.
You work into your contract.
He's the worst tipper in the whole world.
Yeah, you must feel really compelled to, like, leave. Most people leave in 5. You got to leave 20 or 30 because they're going to say, yeah, you're cheap, and then get a bad rep.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how I can deduct that. just on the dinner, you know, there's no business deal or anything like that, but I got to leave a bigger tip because it's like it's an image thing. So,
well, the last part about customer service, and this is the point I made in a blog I wrote about my experience with you, is that what you do, not only on the air, but what KCCI, the environment they create there, and it is not many are privy to go into that environment, and I realize that, and I was very fortunate to get a chance to do that with you, Kevin, but what you've created, that dynamic, really reflects what you've done on the air. The customer service was fantastic, and I think you probably do it, whether the company does it intentionally, and I'm sure much of it is or not, but the greeting, the engagement, all the things we talk about on this show, and that's just how you guys are on the air, too. You welcome viewers in, and you smile, and you engage. Is that connection, is that obvious just to me, or is that by design?
I'm not sure. I think it may be inherent in a lot of people in the business. I think people get into television are gregarious. They're outgoing. They're fun people. I mean, it really is a most interesting business to be in, whether you're in the news business or whether you're in, you know, the entertainment side of it or whatever, because it's different every day. I mean, I'm not going through looking through the same piles of paper every day and things like that. So by its very nature, it's a changeable feast, so to speak, and it really lends itself to that type of people. I don't know that there is actual. I've never seen any hardcore written philosophy of, be nice to people and like you said, all the things that you talk about on the show and on the blog and stuff like that. But I do feel that there is a camaraderie that develops. There really is not a competitive sort of team. It's competitive in that we compete against ourselves, I think. And you know, this competition that is made up in the media, you know, WHO and Channel 8, and, you know, they're always out competing, you know, kind of the Anchorman movie, you know, type of thing, you know, these rumbles occur and things like this.
Sure.
And back alleys. Doesn't exist. We socialize with the quote competition and stuff like that. There is, just getting back to your original question, just a really close-knit philosophy, I guess, if you will. When you work with somebody for 10, 12, 13 years, you can't help but, you know, but befriend them. they may not be your best friend in the world, but you know more about them than you might know about coworkers in another place, and you begin to care about them. And over the years, we've worked together with so many people at our place that we end up going to weddings and baby showers and funerals and things like this. So it really is a family type of thing. And when you have that sort of thing, when somebody comes in to visit your family, well, naturally you're going to be pretty nice and pretty polite to them and welcome them in.
Well, that joy you have and that sense of camaraderie and that sense of family completely and totally shines through. I would say not only from a journalistic standpoint, I don't know journalism from nothing, so I wouldn't say, but just from a kindness and nice standpoint, you have by far the nicest newscast of any that are on the air locally. And that by itself really means, from my aspect, and I think from viewers' aspect, I think that just means a lot.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. I think whether it's a conscious aspect or not, I can't help but agree with you on your assessment. I think we try and be as – you got to remember, and Russ always told me this too, and Russ Van Dyke, and that you got to remember that you're going into somebody's house, and he always read the newscast like he was reading it to his wife. He said you may be going out to 100,000 people or something like that, and that may be intimidating to somebody who's not used to it. But in reality, you're talking to one or two people as you're sitting in their living room with them, and that makes all the difference in the terms of the way you present the newscast. I think in the way you write the news, the way you report the stories and things like that. And I've never forgotten that. I always thought it was a really good philosophy to have. And don't get me wrong, it's not like there isn't some really good debate and argument that goes on and disagreements in philosophy and in story selection and things like that down in the newsroom, but it's not anything that's personal or anything like that. It's a very, very professional sort of debate and a healthy sort of one at that.
Well, speaking of reading and speaking to your wife, Molly may actually want you back, so we probably should let you. I understand you're riding your bike this morning. Is that correct, Kevin?
I am. I'm right now. I'm out at on the Clive Greenbelt Trail, and it's nice and quiet. You may be able to hear the birds in the background, little kids at the playground, or something like that.
And I assume there's probably about a 50-yard perimeter with your security people surrounding you, so that no one can actually approach. I hope you got that all set up.
The 50-yard perimeter around me is a parking lot because I had to get here to get away from the mosquitoes when you first called. It was being dive-bombed by these swarms of little suckers.
If you do a story on that, on the mosquito, I want you to pull on your ear, Kevin, and give me a little signal so all of our listeners know that you're giving us a little signal, all right?
There you go.
All right, there you go.
Right out of Carol Burnett.
Hey, right, exactly. Kevin Cooney with his mop and his bucket saying it's a time we've got to say so long. Kevin, thank you so much for your time this morning, and we love watching you on TV8.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for coming on last week, Johnny. We'll probably talk to you again sometime, get the hot stuff on consumers and shopping and what works and what doesn't. I really enjoyed that.
Well, I will be pleased to be back on, Kevin, if I'm so invited. Thank you so much. Kevin Cooney, one of the great guys in local TV, maybe just one of the best. John Bachman, great guy, too. Met him, and he's wonderful. They're all good. What's also good is when you're looking for a job, what's even better is when you pull it off. And when you get the job, how do you do that? What's key to the interview process? I'm going to give you some of Johnny's tips, a la the five pillars of great customer service. When we return, you're listening to the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show, 1350 KRNT. It is 8:51. Good morning. 8:54 now, the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show, 1350 KRNT. Thank you for tuning in so much this morning, and you're out and about and keeping a smile on your face and a song in your heart. Hope you can maintain that if you're looking for a job. A lot of people have been displaced because of the economy, of course, and that's just a nice 12-letter word for saying you're fired, but it doesn't mean you can't get back in. There's plenty of great opportunities from a recruitment standpoint. I'm going to give you a few tips. This is particularly symbiotic, if you will, and that's inappropriate, but I'll use it anyway because it's one of them 12-letter words. It's particularly appropriate because I am in the middle of interviewing for a client of mine, and if you'd like to become a client of mine, if you're an employer who'd like more training, more oomph in your employees, to get your employees to step up to that next level and to tap into their own happiness and Well, you can go to theunsecretshopper.com where all that information is there. You can email me at Johnny, J-O-N-N-I-E, at theunsecretshopper.com, as well as many other contact, Facebook, Twitter. I'm all over the place. As I frankly have been this morning, 10 keys in your job interview process. You want to get the job? I want you to listen to old Johnny on this one, all right? It's all about being on a date. A job interview is just like a date. You remember a date, right? You go out, you sit down, you have dinner, you have a drink, you laugh, and jokes that aren't funny. You get up, you leave, you hug, and that's a start of something perhaps amazing. Same thing with a job interview. Same dealio dough, except you don't have the drinks. Everybody's got something the other person wants in a job interview. Regular date, everybody, it's love, acceptance, security, happiness, friendship. On a job interview, what does everybody want? They want love, acceptance, security, happiness, friend. Well, not the same things. It's what we're looking for. So here are the 10 things to do. First of all, lead with your joy, your energy, and happiness. Let your skills and experience speak for themselves. Remember, hire happy, train skills. That's the mantra of the Biosphere, my training company. So we're looking for happy people. You send in a resume, it needs to have some happy words in it. It isn't just extremely knowledgeable in COBOL. You know, what is that? That doesn't do anything. Listen, would you date that? Of course you wouldn't. So think about the humanity, your humanness, your joy, and inject your resume, and particularly your cover letter, with it. Exclamation points. I see an exclamation point, a little cover letter, I'm all over it. That person's going to get an interview with me and with the company I'm representing. All right, that's another big one. What are other big ones? Write an email or a note that smiles. Make it personable. Learn the name of the person you're going to be interviewing with and use their first name. Not Mr. Smith or Mrs. Jones, but Kathy, Betty, Johnny. Our first names, those are the things we've heard more than any other word in our entire lives. They mean something to us. They're Pavlovian. We hear them when we go, huh? What? Our attention go, like a dog. What? A bone? A bone, Scruffy? Go. That's how we are about our names. And so use the person's first name in your correspondence, and particularly on the phone. If you get an opportunity to talk to that person in that conversation, learn their name and then use their name in that conversation on the phone when you're setting up the interview. I will promise you that the people I'm interviewing for this particular position, which I'll remain anonymous, but if they use my name on the phone, they're in. They're into an interview. They're going to get an interview with me because that's just how strong names are with me. Thank them as a friend, whether it's correspondence, whether it's on the phone. You want them to be a friend. Again, it's a retail date. Smile, greet, engage, thank, follow up. The pillars of great customer service apply across the universe in all things we do, which are interactive with human beings. And so thank them at the end. Shake their hand at the end if you're in the interview, of course. But if you can't, if you're not physically there with them, I say shake their hand down the phone line. Take your hand mentally and extend it down the phone line and engage them and touch them and reach out to them. You do that on the phone, and you are a millennium ahead of everyone else who is applying for that position. That gets you so far further up in line. And on your resume and cover letter, if you send it in via the mail, and that doesn't happen very much anymore, and I realize that, but if you know, that's way too old school anymore, but write a little note on it. Write a personal note. Dear Johnny, you sounded cute on the phone. Can't wait to meet you. You know, but something like that is what I'm saying. Engage. Thank, smile, greet, be present, use your humanity, hire happy, train skills. That means lead with your happiness and let the skills speak for themselves. Use exclamation points. Use a combination of formal and informal in your correspondence. Talk about your skill set, but then talk about your happy parts too and the things you like and the things you look forward to with this particular job. Pretend like you want the position more than it wants you, because you know what? You're right. Have a great weekend!